Hi, welcome to APES Demystifying Reform series of podcasts, where we invite industry thought leaders and policymakers to help deep dive into reforms in BFSI sector. I'm Ashwin Parekh, Managing Partner, Ashwin Parekh Advisory Services, APES. APES provides business and transaction advisory services in banking, financial services, and insurance sector. APES continuously works with the BFSI industry, regulators, and the government to bring valuable insights to its clients for better decision-making and steering growth. The insights are brought to various stakeholders in the BFSI sector by way of monthly newsletters, regular articles on reforms, and blogs for viewers and listeners. The global economies have gone through two major shocks, COVID-19 pandemic, and if that wasn't enough, the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Several factors have led very unforeseen and adverse changes in their economic performance. China reeled under global sanctions and pandemic, shrinking its economic growth. This led to a global reduction in consumption, and in the early phases of this onslaught, the supply chains were disrupted, leading to sharp changes in commodity prices. Energy costs for most economies burdened their economic growth. Currency suffered, with the exception of US dollar, which rallied during this period. The Indian rupee in the first three quarters of calendar year 2022 performed well vis-a-vis most Asian and European currencies. However, in the fourth quarter, it suffered. Capital market globally suffered on account of these shocks. India stood out as an exception. It was perhaps the only major economy which was performing, and it saw a sizable participation from the retail domestic investors. The markets rallied and showed signs of strength during the periods when foreign investors were withdrawing from the emerging markets. In this episode, we have with us Mr. Piyush Garg, Executive Vice President and CIO, ICICI Securities Limited, to discuss with us the shape of Indian economy in the context of capital markets and investors. Well, Piyush, welcome to this show. We have seen significant economic challenges to many global economies in the last eight quarters. New financial asset, crypto assets, which surged in many countries, including the US, and then crashed, depreciating the accumulated wealth of people across. Most central banks tightened their monetary policy, and India had to follow the path of war on inflation. Give us your perspective on the extent to which the policy tightening in some of the major economies, particularly the US, resulting in a significant rise in nominal interest rates. You've been tracking most of the parameters across various parameters. Could you give some insight to this, Piyush?
Hello, Mr. Parekh, first of all, and thanks for inviting me to your podcast. And obviously, I think you have summarized the entire last, I think, 15 to 18 month journey very well to my mind. Going forward, one thing, you are absolutely right. Global banks are on a war on inflation. So it's like they have declared that this is the thing we have to win over. Rightly so, we have seen inflation surging in double digits in the developed world. In India, we are still used to 6-7% inflation, but developed world is used to inflation of about 2-2.5% on the higher side, maybe 3%. So, but 10 and all is something which, if it gets entrenched into the system, it is not good. And reasons, obviously, you have pointed out. Going forward, I think one lesson we can possibly learn or possibly view the next year as is that the monetary tightening largely has been done. But the central banks are expected to keep interest rates higher for longer because they want to bring the inflation down sustainably towards the 2-2.5% level. Inflation is a year-on-year phenomena. So if you have a high base year, the next year from a base perspective, inflation falls. But on a sustainable basis, it does take time. So the rate cut cycle may be getting behind us, the rate hike cycle may be getting behind us, but I think the rate cut cycle is not going to start so soon. So my sense is that for the calendar year 2023, we would see interest rates at an elevated level, though further tightening may be very limited. Another thing is monetary policy impacts with a lag of 6-9 months. So So one of the things I think this year that may happen is you may see a substantial fall in demand. And that I think will pull down the economic growth rate, and it will also pull down the inflation. And that's, I think, the goal of the central banks. When central banks tighten, they want to surely kill demand. And the words of war on inflation itself, I think, justifies this particular act, that there is going to be substantial fall in demand, very likely. My sense is that it would be some time before they start looking at cutting interest rates. But also one should remember is that the long-term Fed fund rate target on the dot plot is closer to 2.5%, which is 2% lower from the current levels. So we are in interesting times. Rate hike cycle largely behind us to my mind. But rate cut cycle, I think we can wait for another calendar year.
Oh, that's very interesting perspective. I mean, in that backdrop, I mean, looking ahead in 2023, I mean, the global economy is expected to significantly slow down with signs of recession. My listeners would like to, you know, very eager to understand your perspective on this slowdown and how long this slowdown may continue in some of the major economies. And if you can touch a little bit on the China aspect as well, that would be very interesting.
Sure. So again, the good thing is that the worst is behind us. Okay, as I said earlier, the worst of the inflation numbers are behind us. The worst of the projected recessionary numbers, especially in the European region, is behind us. One of the reasons is that there has been significant fall in gas prices and to some extent crude prices in the last 3 months. It has been a mild winter which has helped Europe. So if we were having this podcast 6 months back, it looked like Europe could go into a very deep recession. But now it looks, so I'm citing from the World Bank report, which recently came just, I think, a couple of weeks back, which said that the global growth rate for calendar year 2023 may be closer to 1.7%. And for a full calendar year as a whole, they are projecting both US and Europe to not be in recession. So it's what, in economic terms, many a times it's called soft landing. So it's not a hard landing that actually GDP growth goes into negative. Though there could be one or two quarters where you may face some kind of a negative growth rate, but on a year as a whole, it is not going to be any deep recession. So a very negligible growth, but not a deep recession. So that is good from a global economy perspective. Second thing about China that you asked me, that is another interesting development which has taken place towards the end of the last calendar year. And that actually is, to my mind, I would say a new variable, which I think everyone needs to factor in. Maybe World Bank has also factored into its report that China is going to grow substantially in the next 5 quarters. It is not going to happen immediately. And the reasons we all know, you yourself pointed out something like supply chain shocks, etc. Because everything goes through China. It is to China or from China. So like China gobbles up 33% of the global metals produced on the planet. We all know China is the factory of the world. So everything has to flow from Shanghai to Amsterdam to Los Angeles to India. So China, so all these bottlenecks are going to get lifted. Why? Because obviously China is lifting the COVID-19 restrictions. And as we have seen in India, it is fully open. You can travel without mask anywhere in India. You can travel anywhere in Europe, anywhere in the United States. So same thing is going to be with China. And China had the maximum number of curbs. So most part of the world, ex-China, had lifted most of the curbs. And so China is going to bounce back very strongly. And as per projections, there could be a GDP growth rate of as high as a double-digit growth rate of, let's say, 10% or something in one particular quarter in the next 4 or 5 quarters. So it does add to what is called more optimism on the global growth, which got severely dented or made people more pessimist 6 months back versus, let's say, now this China factor, which is helping, which is good. The fallback of this is that you can't anticipate now that the commodity prices will fall also too much. And since the time China has announced this, we have seen a reasonable upward movement in commodity prices, whether it is zinc, it is steel, it is even crude to some extent. Because typically metal prices do move with economic growth rate. So that's basically a little bit of what I would say, that inflation may take a little bit extra time to come down now. If it was looking to come down in a hurried way, It may take some extra time, but overall, I would say it is positive for the growth because supply chains, etc., also get addressed as China opens up.
Yeah, so I think in that backdrop, after looking at what could happen to some of the global economies and China, let's turn to India. In the backdrop of monetary policy tightening by Fed and most European economies, you should know, how do you see India in terms of its economic performance, inflation management, currency management, which could be a bit of a tricky situation, and the interest rates in the backdrop of all that?
So a very good question, Mr. Parik. I think obviously India, I think on the face of it, everything looks India shining on the global map because such a large economy growing at the highest rate on the planet, I think is a very good thing. It attracts global attention, etc., etc. So India has done very well on most macro parameters. One of the main reasons for this is that we see lesser volatility in macroeconomic parameters in India. As I just pointed out, like in inflation in the developed world went to double digit from 2% to 10%. In India, it maybe went up from like something like 4.5% to 7%. So we had lesser economic volatility. And one of the reasons is obviously we did lesser excess, especially in terms of the fiscal stimulus that was provided by most parts, especially US banks. All individuals, all taxpayers were credited, like trillions of dollars were credited into the account holders, bank accounts in US, Canada, Europe, by the governments during the COVID. So India did not do that. So that's why there is lesser economic volatility. So that has been good. Inflation, obviously, as the global inflation moved, we are also linked to the globe. So inflation did move up, and though it did not rise to the extent of the developed world, but it still went out of for consecutive four quarters out of the RBI's band of 2 to 6% inflation target. So RBI also had to hike rates. And I think RBI did well in the terms of management of interest rates. That is one thing. Currency management, basically buying and selling of dollars, because there are different periods where dollars flows in, there are different periods where dollar flows out. So to curb volatility on the rupee, RBI, I think on that front also did well, in terms of selling dollars when required or when there was bulk amount of FII flows that were happening in the first two quarters of the calendar year 2022. So I think things look fine. Corporate profitability, etc., equity markets, other markets look fine to me. Banking system look fine to me. The only some concern on the macro front I still have on the current account. Our current account is likely to be somewhere closer to 3.5% or 3.25%. For fiscal year 23, that is the year which is going to end next month. Even for next fiscal, our GDP growth rate does come down, but since global GDP growth rate comes down even faster, so our current account deficit is not going to come down that rapidly. So still it is expected to be somewhere between 2.5% to 3%, which will keep putting some downward pressure on rupee. And I think you pointed out in your earlier summary that all the gains rupee made in the 9 months of calendar year 23, it practically erased in one quarter of, that is the last quarter of the last calendar year. And so wherever it started on the pound to rupee or euro to rupee or yen to rupee, it's almost come back, or even developing economy currencies. So rupee has come back. So somewhere some concern on rupee, which may keep some kind of FI flow not very buoyant. I'm not expecting any major outflows. But buoyancy in terms of inflows may still be less in India for the calendar year 23.
That's very interesting. In that backdrop, we see that at least compared to most of the economies, and we still believe that during this entire year, last calendar year, India was perhaps the best performing economy in the world, in fact, because China, of course, had its own set of issues. Let's now look at the Indian capital market. And let's look at them in some of those asset classes. So in the backdrop of increased wealth, improved economic performance, and a noticeable NPA recovery by the Indian banking, we may see some good growth in credit, investments, and in capacity building and asset formation. Then, of course, there's a participation from retail domestic investors. That is something which has perhaps changed the characteristics of the Indian capital markets, major underplay for the Indian capital markets. How do you see financial assets, equity, debt, ETFs, commodity funding perform, these different assets performing in the approach the approaching four quarters of 2023. Just give us some more insights into, you know, improved corporate performance and how that could lead to a medium term to long term sort of, you know, changes in the capital market.
Yeah, so I think you are right. Banking sector, I think I would call it, it's at its decadal best. Credit growth in the system is almost like 16%, 17 to 18% also as well in some periods. One of the reasons why this credit growth is high is, one, the banking system is now clean in terms of their net NPAs, which is at its decadal lows. Second thing is also the nominal GDP growth rate. Now, one thing also I would suggest your viewers to remember is that for fiscal year 22, that is the last year ended, and the current fiscal year 23, the average nominal GDP growth rate is somewhere closer to 17.5 to 18%. Which means that, and the banking system credit growth is more linked to nominal GDP growth rate, not real GDP growth rate. Because we live in a nominal world, we don't live in a real world at all. So if a price of a good goes up from 100 to 110, so to buy the same good, you required 100 last year, you require 110 this year. So there is a credit growth of 10%, though in your consumption pattern, in the volume front, nothing has changed. Obviously, we had this high nominal GDP growth rate. So that's, I think, good for the banking system. Clean banking system is going to help. Equity markets have done well. As we discussed in the last question also, the last point that you raised also was that I think there is a reasonable amount of retail participation. That's, I think, a structural change in the trend of retail participation in equity markets, which we have seen built up pre-COVID. It's accelerated during COVID, but it got built up pre-COVID. Equity markets, now if I see the last 1 year, equity markets have not done anything much. So if you see, let's say, the last 12-month calendar return for equity markets on a year-on-year basis, it would be like minus 2-3% or negligible. So which obviously means if you had a 13-14% growth rate, that means that the markets have corrected 13-14% on the valuation front, because if markets have not gone anywhere and there has been an EPS growth rate, that means the P of the market has corrected. So markets are correcting. Maybe there was some excesses that got built into the market 12 months back. So that is one thing. I expect not significant returns from equity markets still. Two reasons for that. One, equity market valuations are still a bit higher as compared to, let's say, historic trends, about, let's say, 5 to 10% higher. So not a meaningful correction from the current level, but market could remain somewhat sideways if I have to take the next 6 months into account, not 12 months. Interest rates are high. If you had put money in a savings bank or in liquid funds, let's say, last year, you would have possibly got a return of 3 or 3.5%. Today, that same return has bounced to about 7%. So there is a reasonable higher opportunity cost of investing in equity markets. So that basically, from a marginal perspective, a retail investor flows into equity markets can get a little tapered because the opportunity cost is higher. Third thing is our nominal GDP growth rate is going to drop to almost very low double digit. That is about 10-10.5%. In fact, the budget which just came last week, the projected fiscal year 24 nominal GDP growth rate in the budget is 10.5% versus 17.5% average for the last two fiscals, which obviously also means now your top line of the corporates is largely linked to nominal GDP growth rate. Bottom line can still be different. So that means that there is a likelihood that we will see some lower traction in terms of growth numbers on the corporate profitability as well. So that, I think, puts some kind of a downward pressure on equities as compared to the last 2 years. Fourth point is, I think the global markets are particularly cheaper. And as we discussed, I think in the last 10 minutes, China is expected to do very well. It's trading at a very low multiple as compared to India. And we have seen significant outperformance of China in the last 3 months since the time they have announced opening. Even US, if you see NASDAQ and S&P, they have done better than Nifty if I see the last quarter of the last calendar year. And even in this first 1 month plus of the current calendar year. So all this put together, I would say things are fine with India, with the Indian equity markets. Retail participation should continue the way it is. Some bit of tapering one could expect. And markets may not give you the returns that you have seen in the previous 3-year average, if I would say not the last year. Debt at this stage looks more interesting to me. As we discussed, I think the interest rate cycle is closer to its peak. Yeah, I agree that there is no reason to believe that interest rate cuts are anytime soon. But the most of the hike is got baked into the yields across the planet. And in fact, a large part of developed world, the yield curve is highly, highly inverted, which is a very clear sign that interest rates have peaked, inflation has peaked. So debt, I think, looks very interesting. And from a risk-adjusted perspective, I would advise your investors to possibly look at an asset allocation perspective. I would suggest them that you look at debt to increase some allocation more in debt than equity at this juncture, because we may be very close to a hike in interest, end of the hike in interest rate cycle. And whenever the cut starts, let's say 18 months from now, difficult to time it, but you will see significant capital appreciation also in the bonds or in the mutual fund units, wherever you are investing in. Last thing, commodities, we did touch upon this. I think China gobbles up 1/3 of the commodities on the planet. So I would say that since there is no hard lending in the developed world, China likely to grow very rapidly quarter on quarter for the next 5 quarters. Commodity prices may remain a bit elevated. Supply chains will ease, which will help, but overall commodity prices, I would say, can remain elevated. Corporate performance should be supportive, Mr. Parikh. I don't see any problem on that. The only thing is that large part of the corporate profitability, because the nominal GDP growth, etc., is also likely to come down, would come from the banking sector. They have the cleanest balance sheet. And that's, I think, overall my sense on the economy.
So what about quickly? I mean, the bullion ETFs, I mean, gold particularly.
Gold is at a very interesting juncture at this stage. And the main reason actually why gold underperformed, I was actually anticipating gold to go up very significantly when the central bank started printing money and the COVID hit the planet in 2020. But one asset which rose significantly, we all know, was crypto. Now, crypto has seen a significant fall, and it is two things again. One, still you do not know how to intrinsically value a cryptocurrency, Bitcoin or whatever. Second thing is there is a complete failure of the market structure. The exchanges are failing on the crypto side. So it's not the asset that you hold. How you hold the asset also is becoming questionable. Money getting siphoned off, etc. We all know what is happening on some of the top exchanges on the crypto side. So, and with now interest rate cycle peaking out and interest rate cut cycle starting, dollar peaking out, all these things are extremely positive for gold. And we have seen a reasonably positive traction on gold. Plus my view on the rupee, actually, if you see last calendar year, in gold actually gave you the highest return in rupee terms, somewhere closer to 13%. And I anticipate gold to do well, at least going forward, if I have to take the next 24 months. Or let me put it this way, the probability of gold outperforming other assets in the next 24 months is reasonably higher.
Sure. And the last one on the silver ETFs, I don't know. I mean, SEBI did agree to introduce it as one of the asset class or mutual funds. But somehow or the other, it has not really done up so well. Perhaps we'll have to see how it functions. But thank you so much, Piyush, for sharing your thoughts on this subject. Looking forward to more such sessions from you. Thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. We welcome your feedback on our show, and we'll be glad to receive subjects of your interest on which you'd like to hear our views. Do write to us at info@ap-as.com. Also, please check out our BFSI Insight series of podcasts, where we take you through the market updates in the BFSI sector. We provide platforms like newsletters, podcasts, and video clips to industry thought leaders and policymakers to share their views and experiences on trends and reforms in banking, financial services, and insurance. Goodbye until next time.